Hello, everybody. Good afternoon if you're listening on East Coast. Good late morning if you're listening in Peoria, where Harris is, or on the West Coast, or, you know, whatever time you're listening to this, because it's a podcast, not live. But Harris joining me alongside, or Harris is joining me on the Young Lads podcast. I am Peter DeFee. This is episode 16 of our Young Lads podcast. Harris, how are things in Peoria? I know the Cardiac Chiefs were alive and well on Sunday.
They're pretty good. Life is fantastic. About to hit the road with the club and shortly here. We're headed up about an hour and a half to Davenport with a match number of 7. So things are looking pretty good with 12 games to play.
Yeah, and you guys, I saw that you guys have 3 games left in August. Obviously, the start of this road trip. And then how many games in September do you have? I think you told me this last podcast, but I forgot.
Yep. So we have 12 games remaining in total. So 3 in the end of August, 9 in September. And then, you know, don't want to jinx anything, but, you know, postseason's looking pretty bright.
I mean, just go on a 7-game win streak and you're in.
That's all you got to do.
Win 7 of 12.
Pretty easy when you're playing 2 teams under 500. Hey, let's do it.
Hey, listen, I mean, we've seen teams way under 500 beat teams that they shouldn't beat. So
that's correct. Well, good. Yes, crazier things have happened.
Glad to hear the Peoria Chiefs are heading in the right direction, especially since you got there. Because I know they weren't doing that well earlier in the season, and now I think you bred some life into them.
I've never called a postseason baseball, so, you know, it's exciting. Maybe I did something right. You know, who knows? I haven't called a lot of winning baseball in my time, but this is a first.
So I assume you're going to be going into sunny Davenport, Illinois, or wherever.
Davenport, Iowa.
Yeah. Oh, duh. Yeah. So on me, on the other hand, Florida is doing what Florida does and is getting prepared for a hurricane.
How are we hunkering down over there?
So it's supposed to miss the part of the state that I'm in, or I shouldn't say miss, but it's not going to be as bad as it will be in the northern part of Florida. If it hits us, they said, it's just supposed to be a lot of wind and rain, which we get that every summer. And if it turns into more of a Category 2 to 3 hurricane, like there, a lot of them are projecting it to do, it's already ticking a little more west. And I have I have Spectrum Bay News 9. The local weather channel here, and they're keeping a close eye on it, but it's supposed to go more west and north, so closer to the panhandle. So we're going to hunker down. Practices have been canceled for the team that I coach, obviously, for today and tomorrow, and then, you know, just, you know, get ready for the hurricane party that we're about to have.
Yeah, it's just like the one last year. Yeah, I mean, it was targeted for the panhandle, and then it moved a little bit west, and everything was fine. I ran away from it last year. Looking back on it, probably shouldn't have. But hey, it's doing the same thing to you guys this year, so you know, hang in there. It'll be fun.
Yeah, we're not running away this year. We're going to just hunker down and stay in good old Casa de Defi.
Perfect.
So something that's not fine, though, as I try to make a smooth segue from a hurricane that's about to hit Florida to a hurricane that, you know, hit L.A., but also another hurricane hit L.A., and that's Shohei Ohtani having a torn UCL. I know we didn't have any episodes last week, so we couldn't really touch on it, just schedules conflicting with each other. I know you were coming back from Nashville and then had a full home series that you had to get prepared for. So we didn't get a whole lot of chances to talk about this, but basically, Shohei Ohtani is done pitching for at least a year and a half, I would think. He's going to try to hit and do what Bryce Harper did and just hit for the rest of the year, perhaps have the surgery in the offseason, and then, you know, come back and still hit for the Angels or, you know, whatever team he's going to play for. But what were your first initial reactions when you heard the news?
I mean, the first initial thing is that obviously it's going to hurt his free agent stock a little bit. I think we've talked about it at length on this podcast about how I think a team would be silly to give Shohei, you know, 8-10 years on a deal. And this is why, you know, it's, you know, the Tommy John surgery, you know, it's going to happen. I don't think his hitting will be too affected by it. I mean, look at Bryce Harper last year. He basically carried the Phils into the World Series with no UCL. And it's not like Shohei's playing a position either. He's a DH. So, I mean, I think his free agent stock hurts a little bit. But ultimately, the big picture outlook of it is that this is kind of the final blow for the Angels, in my opinion. You know, they tried. They bought a little bit at the deadline. They were committed to trying to make it work. And it just hasn't worked. I mean, it hasn't worked for 10 years. So this is kind of the nail in the coffin here. And again, an injury doesn't prevent someone from coming back to a ball club, that's for sure. But I'll be interested to see how the negotiations are handled in the offseason, because now you have no pitching Ohtani for at least a full year.
Yeah, and when I heard the news, it kind of brought me back to the discussion that we had, you know, a couple of weeks ago, where I kind of put out the 4 for $200 million, where you're paying him, you know, $50 million a year, but you're only getting him for those 4 years. But Ohtani can sign for those 4 years, make all that money, be the highest paid player in the sport with the, at least for the average annual value per year. But then he has, you know, basically, remember what Dylan Betances did when he had his surgery? He kind of went to the Mets to rehab. He signed with the Mets for 2 years. He rehabbed for the 1 year, and then he got paid all that money the second year of the contract. I wonder if it's going to be something like that, to where a team will still pay him $50 million a year to hit, be a 30-plus home run hitter, drive in 100-plus RBIs and stuff like that, and be their everyday DH. And then I wonder if they'll allow him to rehab and try to implement him as a pitcher, you know, in years 3 and 4, and that way if Ohtani can show that he's still a great hitter and can still be somewhat of an effective pitcher, if maybe after that fourth year, you know, we can sign another big contract, another 4 or 5 year deal, and kind of capitalize on both hitting and pitching, because we thought he was going to be able to do that this offseason, but obviously it's not going to happen anymore because he's not going to pitch for, you know, another year, year and a half or so, unless, because everybody's saying it's Tommy John. So unless by some miracle that you can fix this torn UCL by some other means of surgery other than Tommy John, if they figure that out within the next 3 months, you know, he's done for the entire 2024 season, and he's going to have to rehab again and be back halfway through 2025, depending on when he gets the surgery, because he still hasn't gotten it. He's trying to let the inflammation in his elbow go down, and then he's going to decide whether he wants the surgery or not, which I think he's ultimately going to get, but that's going to push him back until at least halfway through 2025.
Yeah, and also I'm interested to see how this affects the MVP race too. I mean, looking at his hitting numbers, 304, 44 homers, 92 RBIs, I think hitting alone, it's his. So, you know, for those who want to say, oh, you know, he can't name the MVP because he doesn't do two positions, well, he does one better than everybody else in the league, and I think that's good enough. But also to the point, you know, Noah Syndergaard got DFA'd the other day. You know, he's still trying to make his comeback from Tommy John surgery. And Howie Rose put out a tweet, Mets radio guy, put out a tweet, and I thought it was right. You know, all these Tommy John surgery comebacks are not guaranteed. It's not like he's coming back like a guaranteed stud, like he is on the mound. I mean, Noah Syndergaard was throwing 100 miles an hour before his Tommy John surgery. You're lucky to see a fastball over 94 from the guy. So, you know, it's very different now with these Tommy John surgeries. So, you know, I just think, again, Shohei has a lot of leverage here because he's the one who's going to be calling all the shots in free agency, right? He's going to make however much money he is. You're going to get a pitcher at some point. I just don't know how good of a pitcher you're going to get.
Yeah, and, you know, Jeff Passens was also talking on the Dan Patrick Show the other day, too, that found something interesting. When Tommy John surgery started, you know, obviously Tommy John was the first person to get this type of surgery. It was 7 years until the next successful one. You know, everybody was still having the same type of surgery after Tommy John had his first, but it took 7 years for to have the next successful one. So you're talking about also three guys that you could watch with the Rays having Tommy John. You don't know what's going to happen with them. Drew Rasmussen, this is going to be his third Tommy John surgery in, I think, 6 years. He had one in Oregon, had one when he got drafted, or Oregon State, I should say, had one when he got drafted, and now he has one now. Shane McClanahan had one when he was at USF. So this is going to be his second Tommy John surgery. Jeffrey Springs, I think, you know, is going to have his second one. So to your point, you know, yes, some guys are better after having Tommy John, but this is going to be Shohei Ohtani's second Tommy John in 5 years. So what is going to be the effectiveness of this Tommy John surgery? We saw him have it in 2019 and he was out for all of 2020, came back in 2021, but now you're talking 2 years later. And to your point with the MVP, I think you can't dismiss what he did when he was able to do both, because he was 10-5 with a sub 3.4 ERA. I think it was a 3.31. He had 3.14. He had 160 some odd strikeouts, had great batting average against numbers. I think his FIP was really good too. There's another number that he had. I think his strikeouts per nine were top five in the American League too. I don't quote me on that because I'm not entirely sure. But then you go out and hit 40 home runs and driving 100 RBIs while you're doing both. So I still think it's his, and I think a lot of voters are still going to vote for him just because in the first half of the season he was going ballistic, and then he had that month of July where he hit, I think, what, 14 home runs, either June or July, where he did that while he was still pitching. And it was just recently that he had the arm fatigue where he missed a couple of starts, and then he comes back and he has to leave the start earlier with arm fatigue, and we find out it's a torn UCL. So to your point, I think it's still his MVP. It's just going to be a matter of who else in the American League is going to take it. Judge isn't going to take it because he missed too much time. Trout's obviously not going to take it because he's probably going to miss the rest of the year. Maybe a Corey Seager, if he can still get his batting average over that 320 mark or so, but I still think it's Ohtani's. I think he's done too much when he was able to do both to lose it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think the big dispute is going to be, you know, in the NL, I mean, which we'll talk about pretty soon. But yeah, it's no doubt Shohei's. I mean, 44 homers, 92 RBIs. We still have over a month left to go in the season, and he's batting over 300. I think there's no doubt. Hitting alone just makes him the MVP. I mean, pitching, you know, you can have the debate all you want. He's on the Angels. They stink. But again, elite at both spots.
Yeah, and then you mentioned a little bit about the NL race, so we can get into that a little bit. But the new topic of conversation is Mookie Betts, because he became the new front runner for MVP. I think he's minus 160 if you look at the odds, and Acuna's still plus 230, which I'd still put a lot of money on Acuna. We can debate this if you want, but I still think it's Acuna's, not really to lose, because I think it's going to still be a tight race with Olsen and Freeman and now Betts entering it, but Ronald Acuna, if he can somehow hit 12 more home runs, which I know we're at the end of August, so he's got to do basically 12 home runs in the month of September, but even let's say he hits another six, that's 34 home runs. If he steals another 10 bases, that's 70 stolen bases. He's going to be batting over 330, might be even batting over 340, depending on what type of month of August or what type of month of September he has. So I still think it's going to be hard to not put him as the favorite for MVP, just because we haven't seen the season from a player, I don't think ever. I think he was the first person to have 28-plus home runs or 29-plus home runs and 60 stolen bases. Once he gets to 30, which he will, unless he just absolutely goes on a home run drought, knock on wood. But he's going to be a 30-70, 30-80 type of player. And I think that's really hard to discredit, even if Betts hits 40 home runs and if Olsen continues to do what he's doing and hits, you know, 55, 60 home runs. I think it's going to be a tight race, but I think you have to acknowledge seasons that we've never seen before. You know, the last guy to hit to do a 40-40 season was Alfonso Soriano, and he didn't even win MVP. I don't know who won it that year. I think maybe Barry Bonds won it that year. I think it was in 2004. But I think you have to acknowledge the season that we've seen from Ronald Acuna Jr. And in my mind, that still makes him the favorite.
Well, also, too, you look at the stolen base column for the other guys. I mean, Mookie Betts only has 10. And he plays for a different club. I understand, you know, Freeman and, you know, J.D. Martinez this year and Jason Hayward or James Outman. These are all guys who are driving him in early. And I'm probably missing some names as well. Yeah, I agree with you, too. You know, like, it's all going to come down to what happens in September. I mean, if Matt Olson goes on another home run tear, he could be the front runner for the MVP. Freddie Freeman stays steadily over 330. He could be the front runner for the MVP. It's just so early to tell. I think the Mookie Betts front runner situation got a little bit more publicity this week just because he was at Fenway Park this past weekend and showed out. Again, we talk about it a lot. When you play in a big market, you're highlighted a little bit more. And guess what? Mookie Betts plays in LA. Big market, yes. But, you know, us East Coast guys don't stay up and watch the Dodgers. So we don't know. He comes to Boston, plays in Boston for a weekend, and he's the new king of baseball. You know? It's perspective as a whole in terms of what we're looking at and how we actually watch the game. You know, are we watching Mookie Betts on a daily basis? No, and nobody's watching Mookie Betts nearly enough because, again, he plays on the West Coast. But, I mean, 312, 35, and 93 is a pretty solid line, but Acuna's 70 stolen bases, a possibility of that. And, you know, if he can get the batting average up, if he can hit some more home runs, it's all going to come down to September. You know, I think everyone's blowing smoke about Mookie Betts because he just played in Boston this past week.
Yeah, and I'm also not trying to discredit the defense that he's playing too, because the Dodgers are asking him to do something that he hasn't done since his early days with Boston, and that's play shortstop and second base, which, don't get me wrong, is phenomenal. He's a phenomenal athlete. I mean, we all know that. But, I mean, you're just looking at the last seven games only for Acuna. He's batting .387. He's only got one home run, but he's got five stolen bases in those seven games. And then, you know, over his last 30 games, he's batting .361 with 13 stolen bases. And he's not striking out a whole lot. He's cut down a lot on his strikeouts. He's gotten better defensively. And Olsen is kind of on a home run drought because I think his last 15 games, he's only hit one home run. And this is still just a Braves team that just keeps plugging along. And Freeman might win the batting average title if Arise drops another 10 points. But I think it's just, I go back to Matt Kemp when he should have won in 2011. He was one home run shy of being a 40-40 player. I think he batted three. Did he win the batting title that year?
No, Jose Reyes won the batting title that year.
Jose Reyes won the batting title in 2011. Let me look up Matt Kemp's stuff real quick, because I always go back to that year where everybody saw what Kemp was doing for a really good Dodgers team. In 2011, he led the league in runs, home runs, RBIs, and he had 40 stolen bases, only got caught 11 times, and batted .324. Won a gold glove, a silver slugger, was an all-star, and finished second in the MVP to Ryan Braun, who I don't even know his numbers off the top of my head, but were impressive, but weren't Kemp's numbers. He had 33 home runs, 111, and .332, so he batted better than Kemp, but it was just, you have to look at the season that a guy's having. He almost had a 40-40 season. I don't understand. And the defense that they played, Kemp was a lot better center fielder than Ryan Braun was left fielder. And I always just go back to that you have to acknowledge the type of season that the guy is having. That's why I think Acuna is the MVP. And I think that's why a lot of the hype around, I shouldn't say hype around Shohei Ohtani in 2021, but you had to acknowledge what Shohei Ohtani was doing. I mean, I think he only won 9 games that year on the mound. It was like 9-6 or 9-7, but it was the fact that he was both pitching and hitting. You had to acknowledge that season because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had the better power season and drove in the more RBIs and was hitting a little higher than Ohtani, but you had to acknowledge the season that Ohtani had.
Yeah, it's something where it's, again, how do you define the MVP? For me, it's the player that brings the most value to a team. I mean, you look at 2011, right? What do people talk about Ryan Braun for? They don't talk about the numbers. They talk about how he did it on steroids. You know, everyone still talks about Matt Kemp and how he got screwed out of an MVP because they loved his numbers. You know, it's the same thing. It's like everybody loved when Judge hit 62 homers last year. But people also loved how Ohtani was great on both sides. What was more valuable to the team and ultimately to the league that year? You look at 2011, the Brewers made it to the LCS. And, you know, who was it? I think the Dodgers were outed by, I don't even think the Dodgers, no, they made the playoffs, but they, I guess, must have gotten eliminated by the Cardinals in the first round that year. Yes. So, then St. Louis obviously went on to win the World Series. So, you know, again, what's more valuable to a team? I'll tell you what, like, if Aaron Judge was healthy all year, he'd be the MVP again, just based on his numbers. But we're not having that conversation today. We're just talking about, you know, Shohei Ohtani's, at this point right now, it's his value to the league. In the National League, look, people love Mookie Betts. People love Freddie Freeman. People love Ronald Acuna. People love Matt Olson. I mean, whatever you pick in the National League, I don't think it's going to hurt anybody. But again, the historic nature of the stolen base category for Acuna is, for me, is the reason why he should be the MVP.
Yeah, and you, like, last year was a perfect example, because Shohei Ohtani on the mound, just on the mound, 15-9 with a 2.33 ERA, 28 games started, struck out 219 batters in 166 innings. Also hit 34 home runs, drove in 95, and hit 273. But it's because Judge broke the single season AL record that he was the MVP. I mean, you had to acknowledge that he broke a record, even though a lot of people are going to say, well, it's still 13 or whatever it was away from the major league record. You still had to acknowledge that, because Shohei Ohtani had more value to the Angels last year than Judge did to the Yankees. But, and then, like, I go back to 2021 too. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had more runs, more home runs, had a better on-base percentage, had a higher slugging, had a higher OPS than Shohei Ohtani, but he wasn't 9-2 with a 3.18 ERA on the mound. And Ohtani, you know, also had 46 home runs and 100 RBIs to add to his name, because Vladimir Guerrero hit 311 while putting up those numbers. Shohei hit 257. That's where I don't want to be like the participation trophy award, like, you know, you had a great season, you know, you're gonna win the MVP because you had, you know, we saw what you were doing, and we're gonna acknowledge this season, and maybe next year Vladimir Guerrero will be just as good, and we'll give it to him next year. But it's the historical aspect too of the season. Ohtani's done something that hasn't been done since Babe Ruth. You know, Judge did something that hadn't been done since Roger Maris. It's the historical sense of the award as well. You know, if Acuna can get to 35, 40 home runs, it's going to be the first time somebody's ever had those numbers in the history of baseball. I think it's really hard to not give him the MVP award when he literally did something that we have never seen in the history of the sport, which has been about 150 years or so.
Yeah, right on the money there. You know, there's really no disputing that. And again, we're in this age of baseball where home runs are home runs. And I mean, you look at Mookie Betts, he's only 5'9", a buck something, and he's got 35 home runs. So it's like, it's super impressive. But I think Ronald Acuna's shown that he's more of a superhuman athlete more than just this pure home run hitter that the game just falls in love with.
Yeah, and like I told you, he's not striking out a whole lot too, so it's not a home run or bust kind of season like, you know, Kyle Schwarber is, where he's got 36 singles and 36 home runs, and he's walking a bunch, but he's batting under 200. So I just think, you know, if you look at it that way, yes, there's four guys that could win the MVP. If you gave it to Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Ronald Acuna Jr., and Matt Olson, I don't think anybody would really be like, no, I think you gave it to the wrong person. I think it's just once you start looking at the historical aspect of what a player is doing, then that's when you get down to the minute details, the minutia of it, where we're like, okay, Acuna's done something that's never been done, that probably won't ever be done again. We have to acknowledge that.
Right? I mean, you're right on the money. 100%.
So now that little rant's out of the way, let's talk about the standings now. Because now we're not officially into September, but we're basically into September. It's August 29th at the time of this recording. Whenever you're listening to it, it might be September 1st, which is Friday, which is also the day of my fantasy football draft. So, Harris, if you want to say a little prayer for my team this year, that'll be well appreciated.
I just drafted last night, and I'm projected to finish third, so I hope that that same draft comes your way. I don't even like my team, to be honest with you, but I'll take third.
Oof. Well, how many men are in your league? Because I'm going from 10 to 12.
We got a 10-team league. 10-team league. I had a Tyreek Hill was my first round pick, and then I have a Jalen Hurts as my quarterback, and my backup is of course New York superhero Daniel Jones, because I don't want to hear about this Aaron Rodgers nonsense. All right, it's Danny Jones's town to run with. But anyways, back to the baseball.
So back to the baseball. The Seattle Mariners have officially overtaken the Texas Rangers in the AL West. The Rangers are on a 1-for-9 spell, whereas Seattle is the inverse of that on a 9-1 in their last 10 games. So Texas is a game back. Houston is a game back. And right now, as it stands, I believe it is going to be Tampa, Texas, and Houston in the wild card. Toronto is now 2.5 games back, with Boston 5.5 back. So now New York, after this series, is 11 games back. They've lost what, 9 of their last 12?
They're done. No, I don't even want to hear about them anymore.
13 or so. But anyway, so I think you take them out. I think Boston, it's going to be a little hard. It's going to be harder for Boston, I think, than Toronto. Just because,
obviously, yeah.
I think I saw somewhere that Boston has a tougher schedule than Toronto does for the rest of the year. But let's just talk about the West, because that's the most intriguing division right now, with everybody a game back, with Seattle now that's 9-1 in their last 10, like I said, coming off of an 8-game win streak. In Texas started the month out winning 8 in a row, and then after that lost 8 in a row, and they just had an abysmal series against the Minnesota Twins that dropped them out of first place for the first time since, I think, April 26th. So just your take. Do you think Seattle, playing the way they're playing now, still takes this division?
That's a tough question. I'm going to go with no. And it's not anything against the Mariners. I like the Mariners. Heck, if there's a team that I root for in the AL West, it's the Mariners. We all love them. Whatever. They'll make the playoffs, all right? They'll be a wild card team. There's just too much firepower on Texas, too much firepower on Houston. I mean, Jose Altuve just hit for the cycle, you know, and we all know the Astros, you know, they're a loaded bunch. They've proven that they don't need to cheat to win. You know, Texas is just, I love Texas's lineup. Even last year, I said going into 2023 that, you know, I think Texas is going to have the deepest lineup possibly in the American League. And at least in this division, I do think Texas has the deepest lineup still. Texas obviously has gone through a tough go of it, 2-8 in their last 10. They should have lost to the Mets last night, but the Mets did Mets things, obviously. So I think Seattle obviously makes the playoffs, but I think there's just too much to overcome. You know, if we're talking next week and the Mariners are up 5 games in the division, then we can start talking about it. But I think right now, with Texas and Houston just being a game back, just too much firepower. I mean, who besides Julio Rodriguez, right? Who are guys who you can look at and say, hey, we put you at the plate, you're going to take over a baseball game right now?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's your point.
I think I can appreciate the fact that the Mariners are a lineup that's deep in terms of guys who contribute and stack good at bats and, you know, single, double, whatnot, whatever. But, you know, Texas and Houston, these are two lineups that, like, at least 7 to 9 guys can come to the plate and change the complexion of a ball game with one swing. You know, I just don't think the Mariners have that in their lineup. But again, I do appreciate the fact that they're more like this underdog, you know, we're a tight-knit group. We go, you know, beat David against Goliath here and win the West. I love it. I'm rooting for them, but I just don't think that they'll come away winning this division.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think you're right. Seattle's more of a death by a thousand paper cuts, whereas Texas and Houston is basically just you get a guy on and he's already in scoring position, whether he's on first or whether he's at home plate, whereas Seattle, I think, has to do a little bit more of just, you know, punching and fighting and clawing their way to get some runs. But, I mean, I really like Seattle's pitching the last couple of days has been really good, starting with Flexen and Castillo and all those guys. But I think you're right in the sense that I still think that Texas is a good month away from getting the lead back and keeping it for good. I think they have too much firepower, especially in the rotation now. Scherzer since going over has been really good. Jordan Montgomery since going over has been really good. You still got Michael Perez there, or Martin Perez, excuse me. So the only person that really scares me is the guy in the bullpen, and that's Aroldis Chapman, who in non-save situations has a sub one ERA, and in save situations has blown half of his saves since going over to Texas and has a 4.3 ERA. But that lineup's still really good with Semien and Seager. I talked about how he could possibly be in conversation for every AL MVP. But you still got Nathaniel Lowe. You still got Jonah Heim. Adolis Garcia at some point is going to turn it around in the month of September, and he's going to be Adolis Garcia. So Josh Jung, I think you lost a little bit when he got injured. I don't know when he's supposed to be back. I think he might be out for at least half of this month. But I still think it's the Rangers' division to lose just because they've been so much better against Houston as well. And they've kind of destroyed the label as Houston's little brother and have kind of fought back. But this series against Minnesota, a team that's 69-63, you had a chance on Monday to win a game where you were up 5-0. And then you kind of lose it on, let's see, when did it, on what, Tuesday, or, no, I'm sorry, on Friday you had a chance to win it. Saturday you let them walk it off, and then I think they won Sunday. And then, like you said, the Mets had a chance to put the Rangers away, and they ended up scoring two runs in the ninth inning, which was the first time they've come back from down multiple runs in the ninth inning all year. I think they were 0-12 to begin the season. So I think it's just still... there's still too much firepower for Texas.
Yeah, 100%. That lineup is just loaded. I mean, you look at the pitching too. Jordan Montgomery's pitched pretty well. Max Scherzer has pitched pretty well. Both those guys coming over the deadline. So, I mean, yeah, I like Texas. And again, you look at the rosters too. Like Seattle's roster to me is built to, you know, make the playoffs, possibly go on a small little run. But this Texas and Houston roster, I mean, those teams are built to win the World Series right now. I think the Mariners are still like, if you put those teams in the World Series right now, I think the Mariners still need another piece to complete it. So that's kind of my vision on it.
So now moving on to the NL side of it as well is San Francisco and Cincinnati. San Francisco's a half game back. Cincinnati's a game and a half back. They're actually locked in a series battle right now. I know San Francisco took the first two games of that series, or excuse me, it's not San Francisco, is it? It is San Francisco playing Arizona? I just looked. No, Arizona's playing LA, so it is San Francisco and Seattle and Cincinnati, excuse me. So the wild card for the NL intrigues me just because San Francisco has been playing better baseball after the Rays series as of late. And they're beating the teams that they need to beat that were in front of them in Cincinnati. So they've overtaken them. They're a game up on Cincinnati and only a half game back of Arizona, who lost last night to LA. And then Chicago's also, I don't know who Chicago's playing, but they're on a one game losing streak. They're only a half game up on Arizona. So this intrigues me a little bit more just because Miami's been decent. They have a series against the Rays this week, or this today, actually, starting today and tomorrow. They got to take at least one out of two again just to stay afloat because they're 3-7 in their last 10. They're kind of slipping, but they're still staying there. But Philadelphia is running away with it. I think Philadelphia will be the number one team. I think you're looking at Chicago, Arizona, San Francisco, Cincinnati, and Miami for those last two spots. And out of those five teams that I just said, who do you think would take the last two?
I like the Giants to slide into that three spot, and I like the Cubs. I've been a Cubs supporter for months now. I still think the Cubs are going to be the Cinderella team this year that wins the World Series. I think they're a team that gets hot. I said this a few podcast episodes ago. They're going to be the team that they had that one good week at the end of July, right before the trade deadline, and they said, okay, we're going to buy just a little bit, right, just in case things go bad. So, they got Jamer Candelario in their lineup now. He's done pretty well. Still think their pitching is great. I believe Justin Steele's starting tonight. So, he's been one of the better arms. I know Stroman, I believe, is still on the IL. But again, you look at the Cubs lineup, and it's like, again, a bunch of misfits coming together, with Mike Tauchman playing center field. But, Cody Bellinger having a resurgent year. And again, these are the kind of guys, like I'm telling you, when you play for the Cubs and you're in the race, like, everything is in your favor when you're playing at Wrigley Field. Because those fans in that ballpark, there's just no way the Cubs lose in that ballpark with the fans knowing that the Cubs are in a race, in the final month of the year. There's just no way I see the Cubs miss the playoffs here. So I think the Giants are just built for it. They got a lot of veterans. They got a lot of guys with postseason experience. Still a lot of guys left from that 2021 team when, that check swing call at the end of that 2021 game against the Dodgers, game 5. There's still a bitter taste in their mouths. I think they're just going to overtake Arizona. And then the Diamondbacks, credit them. They've had a good year or whatever. But I just don't think this year's the year. People like coming to Arizona. I think the Diamondbacks will buy well in free agency this offseason. But right now, I think it's the Giants.
Yeah, and then you were talking about the Cubs, too. They had a great month of August. They started out by sweeping Cincinnati, taking 2 of 3 from Atlanta. They lost 2 of 3 to New York, but then took 2 of 3 from Toronto, which I know we had an episode during that week where we talked about the Toronto series coming up and they needed to do something to kind of prove that they were still in it, and that's exactly what they did. They took 2 of 3 from Toronto, split the two-game series against Chicago, took 2 of 3 from Kansas City, 2 of 3 from Detroit, 3 of 4 from Pittsburgh, and now they lost the first game of the series against Milwaukee. They have another one tonight at 8:00. But then you look at the month of September. They end the month of August with Milwaukee. You have Thursday off, which is the last day of August, the 31st, and then the 1st of September, you start a 4-game series with Cincinnati. Then you go, so you're at Cincinnati. Then you're back home to face San Francisco for 3, Arizona for 4. That is going to be a tough 2 weeks. If you include last night, that's going to be a tough 2 weeks. And if they can somehow find a way, let's see, that's 3 + 4 = 7, 10. That's 14 games. If you can find a way to go 7-7 in that series, you split the Cincinnati series 2 games apiece, and you split the Arizona series 2 games apiece, and you find a way to win the Milwaukee series, and maybe you lose the San Francisco series, or vice versa. I think you put yourself in a good spot, because then you have Colorado at Colorado for 3, have an off day, then you go to Arizona for 3, have an off day, come back home for Pittsburgh and Colorado, and then you finish off with Atlanta and Milwaukee. So if you can get through those 14 games, go 7-7. Find a way to go 3-3 between Colorado and Arizona, where maybe you win 2 out of 3 against Colorado and you lose 2 out of 3 against Arizona, and then you win 2 out of 3 against Pittsburgh and Colorado. When you come back home, that Atlanta Milwaukee series might just be for seeding. It might not be to get into the wild card round. Those last 6 games might be to determine whether you're the 1, 2, or 3 seed.
Could be fighting for the division lead as well in the Central,
depending on how you do against Milwaukee today.
Ending series against the Brewers, ending the year with Milwaukee. I think, 5 games back are the Cubs of the Central right now. I think, that's a division that shouldn't get overlooked, considering the fact that, the Brewers historically have been so up and down. That shouldn't be overlooked either. I just think, you mentioned that schedule of the home games too. Like, look, Wrigley is a tough place to play as an opponent, especially in September with the fans of Chicago. They're very knowledgeable. They know what's going on. It isn't like you're coming to the Trop, which has 8,000 fans on a Tuesday night in a late pennant race in September. No offense to my Rays people. But, look, Wrigley's packed every game. It just is. The fans are really knowledgeable of what's going on over there. Those home games at Wrigley Field are going to feel like playoff games to whatever opponent comes in. And the Cubs know that every game is going to matter, especially playing at Wrigley, especially with the team that they have. And look at what they're fighting for, too, right? You know, just as a team-wise player perspective, Cody Bellinger's on a one-year deal. He's going to be a free agent next year. Marcus Stroman has an opt-out, right? He may opt out after this year. You know, if the Cubs win and make the postseason, you probably get those two guys back next year. So I bet you the Cubs are going to be pressing to win these ball games. So, I think really highly of the Cubs.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, Stroman. He said he's loved pitching in Chicago.
Yeah.
Know, the atmosphere and the fans are amazing. So,
yeah,
maybe that puts a little bit something in the back of his mind like, hey, I have an opt-out, but maybe I can – if I use the opt-out, I'll just come back and sign for more money with Chicago. It's not a not an opt-out and leave. It's just a – there was something in his clause just in case something went horribly wrong, which at the beginning part of the season, it looked like the Cubs were going to be a 15 to 20 game under 500 type of team. And all of a sudden they started turning around with Tauchman over in center field and Bellinger back at first base, playing like the Bellinger from the Dodgers when he won the MVP and Rookie of the Year, you know, in 2017 and 2019 respectively. So, you know, and then just going back to Milwaukee real quick, I think it's going to be hard for the Cubs to overcome just because of the series that Milwaukee has. They have Chicago right now, so if you take two out of three, you're now six games up over the Cubs. Then you have Philadelphia for three to start the month of September, which is difficult. But then you go to Pittsburgh, then you go to the Yankees, which you can easily take two out of three from both of those teams because they're both last place teams. And then you come back home from Miami and Washington. Miami for four, Washington for three. I'm not saying Miami is going to be a good team to play, quote unquote, for Milwaukee, but I mean, you could easily take two out of three against Miami, depending on how their pitching staff lines up for that series. And then Washington's played good recently. They have the same record as the San Diego Padres, if you want to believe that. And they're just as far back in their division as, you know, the Padres are in the wild. They're both the same amount of numbers, the same games back in the wild card as each other. So they're playing a little better, but they're still a rebuilding team. And then you have St. Louis for four. You have to go to Miami again. Then you come back home and you play St. Louis and Chicago. So they have a little bit of an easier start and end of the month of September, where they have seven games still against the St. Louis Cardinals, who's, I believe, if Pittsburgh's not in last place, then St. Louis is. I got to check the standings real quick. Yeah, St. Louis is in last place. So you're playing a fourth and a fifth place team in Pittsburgh and St. Louis. And then you're playing a last place team in, as I'm trying to get back to their schedule, as I'm efforting. Pause one moment. So you're playing a last place team in St. Louis seven more times. You have three more against a last place Washington team, three against a last place New York Yankees team, and three against a fourth-place Pittsburgh team. The only teams that are in second place that you're playing are the Phillies and the Cubs, because Miami's in third place in their division, and you play them seven times. So that's an easier schedule for the Milwaukee Brewers than it is the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right 100%. Like, you know, but I just don't think you can count the Cubs out. Like, I think they'll make the wild card. I really do. Just based on what's, you know, happened in the regular season. The Brewers are, you know, good ball club, good pitching, you know, solid offense. But who knows? The Cubs could, you know, sweep the Brewers. And now you're two out heading into September. And anything could happen.
Yeah,
that's also that's a pretty big possibility. You know, if they win three against Milwaukee, that's now you're talking about the Cubs possibly contending for the Central.
Yeah, I mean, and look, they lost the first game of the series yesterday against Milwaukee, but they're still two wins away from only being three games out going into the month of September. And then I already forgot who the Cubs start the month of September with. I forgot who I said they started with. I have terrible short-term memory. Cincinnati. So. And Milwaukee has to play Philadelphia. So you're two more wins this series away from only being three games out. And then you're three out of four against Cincinnati and 2 out of 3 loss for Milwaukee to Philadelphia of being tied for the top of the division, which is a very likely possibility to where now from September 4th until October 1st, for almost a full month, it's a dogfight to see who's going to win the Central, which I think whoever wins the Central is going to be matched up against, you know, Atlanta in the ALCS, because I like the Central teams a lot more than I like either the Dodgers or the Diamondbacks. I think the Dodgers are a good team, but I think they're benefiting from a lackluster West Division that has the Padres. The Diamondbacks have been up and down in the month of August. And you're also looking at the Colorado Rockies, who are 19.5 back of the third place wild card. They're 49-82. They're going to have a losing record again this year. Arizona has just started to tick back up to where they were the first half of the season. San Diego is San Diego. They're up and down. And San Francisco has been better as of late, but they're still 4-6 in their last 10. So I think that's the only reason why LA is in the position that they're in. I know they have a really good team, really good roster, but I think they're benefiting from a lackluster AL West, which it seems like it is every year. So it seems like they're just going to run away with the division every year. But I think it's whoever comes out of the Central is going to be facing Atlanta in the championship series, if that's possible. I don't know what the bracket looks like. I don't know. You know, let's see. It would be Atlanta's the clear one. So you would have Atlanta and LA as your 1 and 2 seed. Then Philadelphia would be your 3 seed. Chicago's your 4 seed right now. No, I'm sorry. Milwaukee would be your 3 seed. They're going to be playing at Arizona as it stands right now. Then you would have Philadelphia and Chicago playing each other. I think Chicago could not very easily beat Philadelphia, but I think that'd be a really good series depending on who they match up with pitching-wise. And I think Milwaukee could beat Arizona. So I don't know how those guys would go into the LA and Atlanta series. I think it would be the winner of Philadelphia and Chicago facing LA and the winner of Milwaukee, Arizona playing Atlanta. So you could very well have Chicago and LA against Milwaukee and Atlanta. And I kind of like Chicago a little bit more than I like LA.
Or get on the train. Get on the train. Yeah.
Because Corbin Burns, Woodruff's starting to get hot again for Milwaukee. He's been back. They got a nasty closer in Devin Williams. They got a really good bullpen. Christian Yelich, I think I haven't really looked at him for the rest of the year, but I know at one point he was Christian Yelich of 2018-2019. So, and the Cubs have a good roster.
They certainly do. So, I mean, look, I think this September is going to be one of the better Septembers coming down the stretch in a while. You know, we could have something.
I wonder if we'll have anything from 2011 where a team that's 10 games out.
Yeah, we talked about it last episode, how we could recreate 162 from 2011. I forget how. I think it was because Red Sox are playing Baltimore the final weekend. And I think the Rays are... No, the Rays don't play the Yankees again this year. So, I don't know. We'll see. But I guess, speaking of Rays and Yankees, I guess that could make our transition here into our final topic of the episode. The fisticuffs from the lowly Yankees to the surging Rays last weekend. Just an embarrassment to the New York Yankees. Just a last-place team trying to stir things up. There's no need for it. The Rays are better than them. It's just, I didn't even watch, to be honest with you. I just saw, you know, all the fights and the interview and whatever. But, I mean, just absurd what's going on there.
Yeah, then Ian Hamilton, his comments were really weird. It was saying, you know, he wishes they could play one more time. And everybody in the Tampa Bay market, obviously, is saying why. So we can beat your ass one more time. So it's... I don't understand, though, like, the Rays have a right to be mad at the Yankees, because in a season series that spanned 14 or 13 games, the Rays got hit 12 times. The Yankees only got hit 3 times. So there was no retaliation against the Rays. I think it was solely the Yankees just trying to stir things up, maybe try to get a couple of Rays guys suspended for fights. And it was a good job by the Rays, especially Yandy and Arozarena, who have been hit the most. I think Yandy's been hit 12 times this year, or 8 times this year, 3 of which have been from the Yankees team, so or Yankees pitchers. So they had every right to want to go out there and try to, you know, kill somebody, especially Yandy Diaz. I mean, if you guys haven't seen what Yandy looks like, go look him up.
I wouldn't want to be in the way of that guy.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a good job of letting cooler heads prevail. And Brandon Lau said it the best. Like, it's a last place team trying to stir things up. The Rays are obviously in a tighter race than the Yankees are. The Yankees aren't even going to make the postseason. You know, they're going to ruin the whole every AL East team is going to be above 500 thing because they're going to finish under 500. So, you know, you could be looking at Cashman and Boone being fired this year. You know, Donaldson, LeMahieu are going to be gone. Stanton is a shell of himself. So this is just a really bad last place team trying to stir things up. And I'm not trying to, you know, throw it in your face, Harris, because I know you're a Yankees fan.
But you're right. You're right. Like, you're 100% right. I mean, this team has nothing to play for right now. Zero. They can't even play spoiler because they can't even win. I mean, everyone's, you know, excited over the fact that, you know, I watched the Yankee game last night and Luis Severino throw 7 shutout innings, you know, whoop-de-doo. He did it against the Tigers. And then 2 starts ago, he throws 6 2/3 against the Nats, gets a standing ovation at Yankee Stadium. He did it against the Nationals. So, like, you know, he could, you know, get his numbers up to 100 miles an hour on the fastball, whatever. Guess what? Team's still, whatever, games under 500, 11 games out of a wild card spot. Season's over. That was just... I think it was just really cowardly of the Yankees to, you know, try and stir the pot like that. And by the way, this podcast owes an apology to Brandon Lau. A couple weeks ago, we were ripping him a little bit. And now, you know, maybe his batting average isn't all that high, but now he's got 21 RBIs in his last 24 games. And especially after driving in 4 against the Yanks on Sunday, now he's got the extra base hit in his game a little bit. Over his last 19 games, he's batting .264. He's got 17 RBIs. Or no, sorry, 21 RBIs over the 23 games, whatever that is. Yeah, I think he's starting to drive the baseball a little bit. That'll be a big help for the Rays. So, yeah, sorry to him. And he provided a really good quote for us that's now on a T-shirt, which I saw on Twitter, or now X. Yeah. So, yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely one of those guys that if he gets hot, he can definitely carry a ball club. And listen, I've said that, and I'll be the first one to say sorry, too, because I was bashing him a lot. And I still will. I mean, it's the fan in me, the Rays fan in me, that after a while, it's like, okay, this guy needs to be healthy. When he's healthy, he's good, but he's never healthy. So that was the only thing that, you know, I'm not trying to justify me, you know, crapping on him. But yeah, I mean, he said it best. The Rays have a lot more to play for, and they can't deal with, because especially with McClanahan going down, and now you have the Franco situation, which we still really don't know a whole lot about, but he's most likely going to be gone for the rest of the year. You can't afford a Arozarena or Yandy Diaz to have a 5-game suspension when in the month of September you need to start hot. You know, if in those 5 games you go 1-4, and Toronto and Baltimore go 4-1, or the teams behind them get on a hot streak, now you're looking at maybe instead of being the 4th seed and winning and being the first wild card team, now you're looking at either the 2nd or the 3rd wild card team. So they're getting to the point of the season now that they got to make sure everybody's healthy for the playoffs, especially Eflin and Glasnow, because those are going to be your 2 guys that are going to start your wild card series. And you got to make sure that Yandy and Arozarena keep cool heads, and that Bilal stays hot, and that, you know, Siri and Rayleigh play really good defense, and maybe you get Margot and he becomes Margot ahead again, you know, Manuel Margot ahead after he gets back from cleaning up the loose bodies in his elbow that a lot of people think is what happened when he was going bad. You know, Paredes, if he stays the same way as he's been, I think Paredes has been very underrated defensively. I think he's been playing a very quiet gold glove caliber shortstop. And then, you know, who knows? Maybe Oslevis Basabe and Jonathan Aranda throughout the month of September kind of get hot and help propel this team to not only the first wild card spot, but maybe they overtake the Orioles. So in the East. So there's a lot more to play for, and Brandon Lau was you know, correct in what he said.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm glad that the Rays haven't let this Wander thing distract them. It shouldn't. I mean, look, guy was clearly a locker room cancer at the beginning of the year, and I doubt he's playing a big league game ever again. We're not going to speculate it, though, but whatever. I think, you know, Basabe's been a nice bright spot, and Aranda, we know what he can do with the bat. I mean, he has lit up AAA the last couple of years. His problem is simply he can't field. Like, no matter where you put him, he can't field. But, you know what they say? I mean, you're a coach. You know this. If you hit, you play. So, you know, if he keeps hitting, he'll play.
Yeah. So I think that's going to do it for this episode, unless, Harris, you got anything to add.
I got nothing else. I think we're going to be locked in at the end of September here, or getting into September here. I think it's going to be a good September, the best September in a while, just because I think there's some teams that haven't been in a long time that are actually going to stir the pot a little bit. So very excited for it.
I'm very interested to see the NL wildcard race, at least, with those five teams that I named only, what, 2.5 games back between the second wildcard spot and that fifth team. So really interested to see what's going to happen after that. I know Monday is Labor Day. Harris, I don't know what the Peoria Chiefs schedule looks like, but I will be.
Mondays are off.
So, but no episode on Labor Day because yours truly will be playing in an all-star game for the men's league that I play in. So we got to go to Cocoa Beach and play in that. So that's going to be a lot of fun, playing in the Space Complex ballpark that they got over there. So no episode Monday. Maybe we'll try to get something Tuesday or Wednesday too, just to recap the rest of this week. But Harris, if you don't have anything, I think that's going to do it for this episode.
Yeah, good episode as always. Good luck in that game. Hopefully the field isn't flooded, and stay safe down there. The hurricane coming your way. I know it's going to miss, but you know, you never know. And episode 16 in the books.
Yes, and good luck to the Peoria Chiefs, who are going to be playing in Davenport, Iowa. Hopefully,
there it is.
Hopefully, they just sweep the series. They go 6-0. That way, you're only one game out of making the playoffs.
And the other team behind us loses, and we'll just be in. You know,
yeah, exactly. Just make it easy. Just sweep the series.
Exactly.
Speaking of minor leagues,
yes.
My whole plan of watching Paul Skeens kind of failed miserably.
Yeah, that didn't work.
He played one game in Bradenton, and then got called up to Double A, where he didn't look too good, but he's in Altoona.
He got a bit touched up. Now, I was looking at the strike zones, and according to someone, if it was big league umpiring, he would have been out of the first inning. Whatever. Libby Dunn did not get treated to a show. Disappointing on both ends. But you know what they say. Another start for you coming soon. So that's all right.
There we go. So my dream of seeing Paul Skeens in a Bradenton Marauders jersey has fallen flat on its face. So, but this is going to do it for episode 16 of. I thought I had a sneezer. Sorry. This is going to do it for episode 16 of the Young Lads Podcast. We will talk to you next week. For Harris Eisenberg, I'm Peter DeFeed Jr. saying so long, and thanks for listening.